On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
For baby boomers, one of the defining moments of our childhood was learning that our president had been murdered in Dallas. I was 10 years old and in the fifth grade, and I won't forget. Ever since then, America has been troubled because of the fact that we're not completely convinced that we were told the total truth. There were so many unanswered questions, and there were so many theories. Was there one lone gunman? Were there conspiracies of shooters? What really happened on that afternoon in Dallas? Now a new book takes a look at the relationship between the Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court, who became synonymous with the investigation and some would say the whitewashing of the murder of President John F. Kennedy. Welcome to On the Bookshelf.
We're talking to Charles Brandt, the author of Suppressing the Truth in Dallas, Conspiracy, Cover-Up, and International Complications in the JFK Assassination Case. Charles Brandt is the New York Times bestselling author of I Heard You Paint Houses, a biography of Jimmy Hoffa assassin Frank Sheeran, and the co-author of Donnie Brasco, Unfinished Business. Worked as an investigator for the Welfare Department in East Harlem near Fat Tony Salerno's mafia headquarters. Graduated from Brooklyn Law School in 1969, became a prosecutor and homicide investigator in 1974, was promoted to Chief Deputy Attorney General for the state of... I have to say that this is not the first book that I have read about the assassination, not the first book that fingered the mob, but it is the first time that I've read a book that talks so much about Earl Warren and about Alan Dulles' position on the Warren Commission, and the relationship between Marcello and the Bay of Pigs. So I love that the beginning of the book, you say the race for Pinocchio's is on. Here are the contenders. And you tell about all the people that had something to gain by the death of President Kennedy.
Well, I appreciate your picking up on that, because that was the goal, as I wrote. The goal was to have it analyzed by a homicide investigator with vast experience. That would be me.
Right.
And I'm still in touch with the old homiciders from the early 70s. Stan Friedman and John Daugherty.
That's quite a crew. I was very interested in the background of Earl Warren. I didn't really know very much about how Warren came to be the Supreme Court Justice. Tell us a little background on Earl Warren, because you unearthed some pretty interesting things.
Yeah, well, he was a... basically an on-again, off-again politician in Alameda County, California, and used his position as the district attorney of California to further his career. And he became the governor of California. And what he did during the war, the generals wanted to move Japanese Americans from the coast, the Pacific coast, where they would have a position of being able to see the vessels leaving, coming and going, and report back by wireless to the Japanese admirals. And there was a contingent, mostly in California, of people that felt that they should be removed inland.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This was to internment camps.
Right.
And he was one of the prime movers. He was the prime political mover to accomplish that. When the government was sued by a man named Fred Korematsu, who didn't want to leave, he wanted to stay in his farm on the Pacific coast. He lost the fight. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the government had the authority to move these people inland and away from the shorelines. The dissenting opinion from a justice from Chicago, Frank Murphy, he was on fire. He called Earl Warren every name in the book. That's the start of his political takeover. And the next thing he took over was the American system of criminal law.
Earl Warren had a lot of things to keep hidden, but so did Alan Dulles, who was no fan of the Kennedys. Wasn't he summarily dismissed from the head of the CIA after the Bay of Pigs, correct?
Well, he was, but it was a was a setup, really. He was criticized, he was asked to resign, and he did, and he took all the blame for the Bay of Pigs invasion, which I analyze in the book, that it was just a drama. It was a script. Earl Warren became Chief Justice of the United States by controlling 32 delegates from California for the nomination for president. And Eisenhower needed those delegates. And so Eisenhower offered Supreme Court appointment. And Earl Warren declined, saying, no, I want to be the Chief Justice. And he had no experience for that.
Oh,
he had never been a judge of any kind. Eisenhower caved and made him the Chief Justice of the United States.
Hmm.
You know, he was revered. So many of the things that I bring out in the book that he did that were wrong, that were political and not judicial, and so many of the things that I point out are still in effect and still affecting our law enforcement.
Another shady character in all this, of course, is Jack Ruby, who's long been, was actually put on trial. Melvin Belli, the prominent West Coast Mafia-connected trial lawyer, is his lawyer, one of the top lawyers in the country.
The most prominent mob lawyer, Melvin Belli.
Didn't do very much in the trial, apparently. Sort of let it go, and as though it was predetermined how it was going to turn out.
Jack Ruby was one of those who got a whole bunch of Pinocchios. He lied like crazy, and Earl Warren gave him a license to lie.
Yeah.
Warren report never satisfied anyone.
I really kind of think that one reason that people began to distrust the government is that no one was really satisfied with the Warren Commission. Even the people that agreed with its findings thought that they rushed to it, that they ignored witnesses and all of that. Is that a valid kind of interpretation of the events?
Well, for my money, as a homicide investigator, the whole thing is built around the notion that there were very prominent people who had committed a crime called felony murder, and these people on foreign soil were exposed finally in 1975 in a committee investigation by Senator Church, Frank Church of Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an investigation into the plots to kill foreign leaders. And Church was famous for saying that at no time should our government sanction murder. And that just changed an awful lot of terrible things that were going on at the time.
Well, and during this time, there's the implication that the U.S. government did nothing to stop the murder of the duly elected president of South Vietnam, and that they were actively seeking to eliminate Castro. And Bobby Kennedy, I thought this was really interesting that you brought out, that Bobby Kennedy shamed this mafia boss who was tied into the plot to kill Castro right before the Bay of Pigs invasion, and that assassination didn't happen, and the implications are pretty clear.
Yeah. Carlos Marcello was the mafia boss of both New Orleans and Dallas. That was his territory. And a boss owns the territory.
Yeah.
Nothing happened. In fact, Marcello had a rule that nobody from the mafia was allowed to even visit New Orleans without his permission.
Mm.
He didn't want anybody sneaking up on him. One of the prominent group that needed protecting.
Right.
This is not just a book about the history of what happened, but it's a mystery as well.
Right.
And you get a chance to kind of follow the Charlie Chan methodology of figuring out a crime, figuring out a murder.
Right.
When I left the office as the chief of homicide, I had 56 homicides that I had handled. And these people that have theories are by and large well-meaning, because they know something's not right about this Warren report, and something's not right about the constant muddle that we were in, and we had no idea what was going on. I was a school teacher in New York at the time of the assassination, and an amateur. I just read the newspaper. But as I got older and developed a career, I was hired by the Attorney General of the state of Delaware with the instructions that I would be his point man whenever a body was found, whenever there was a murder, because we were concerned about all the different rules that were handcuffing the police at the time.
Right.
And if a cop made a mistake, and this is now the 1960s I'm talking about, if a cop made a mistake, that would be the end of the case.
Right.
And there were some very famous cases that I could that I do talk about in the book.
Well, Charles, I know that our time's about out, and I thank you so much for talking to me. The book, again, is Suppressing the Truth in Dallas, and it's available online and in bookstores everywhere. And I thank you so much for talking to me today. It's been a great privilege, your book is a great read for people who love to watch detective procedures and try to figure out who done it. It's a great read. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
We're talking today to Mark Shaw, the author of Collateral Damage, The Mysterious Deaths of Marilyn Monroe, JFK, and Dorothy Kilgallen, and the Ties That Bind Them to Robert Kennedy and the JFK Assassination. This is the very first one about the connection with Dorothy Kilgallen, and for most baby boomers, they might remember her as a frequent guest on What's My Line. You have done the research to link the peculiarity of the deaths of these within 40 months, and you say the key to all that is the appointment of Bobby Kennedy as Attorney General. So tell us how this theory developed.
Well, thank you, Doc. I never intended really to write this book. I'd written that bestseller about Dorothy Kilgallen, The Reporter Who Knew Too Much. I wrote a book about Joe Kennedy. You know, I'd exposed the Ruby trial transcripts, Dorothy Kilgallen being at the trial and interviewing Ruby and all that. I was going to quit. But an awful lot of people kept asking me, supporters of mine and readers of the books around the world, is there a connection between the deaths of Dorothy Kilgallen, who people may remember on What's My Line, but also she was an investigative reporter called the most powerful female voice in America during the 50s and 60s. Is there a connection between her death, because she had investigated the JFK assassination, and I proved in the book that she was murdered when she got too close to the truth, and the death of Marilyn Monroe? And I didn't think there was, even though there is, within 40 months, as you said, and this is a real shocker for people, we lost Marilyn Monroe in 62, JFK in 63, and Dorothy Kilgallen in 65. So I started looking into it, and I think the same curiosity that I had, what I believe I've done is resolve three true crime murder mysteries in this book. And how that happened is that I first found that Dorothy Kilgallen and Marilyn Monroe were very good friends. And Dorothy had written many columns about Marilyn, both before she died and afterwards. And she praised her, and she talked about, you know, what an incredible actress she was, overcoming gender discrimination and becoming, you know, probably the most famous woman in the world at one particular point, this beautiful woman. And so I found that relationship. And then, unfortunately, I came across a column that she wrote after Marilyn died, and it talked about this relationship she had with Bobby Kennedy. Now, most people, and I was one of them, remember that she had the affair with JFK after she sang happy birthday to him, remember, on his birthday and all that.
Right.
But very few people knew about the Jack Kennedy, about the Bobby Kennedy affair. And so as I started to look into this, and Dorothy gave me the clue, talked about the relationship after JFK dumped Marilyn, Joe Kennedy told him to, and so that was over, and along came Bobby. And he was kind of like a little puppy dog, my research has showed. Joe Kennedy had his trophy actress, Gloria Swanson, that he was with. JFK had Jackie and then Marilyn. Well, Bobby Kennedy wanted a trophy. Mm. And so he started seeing Marilyn when he was in L.A. working on a movie based on one of his books about the mafia. And he was with her all the time, either at her home or at Peter Lawford's beachfront home and all of that. And basically, Marilyn fell in love with him, too. Powerful man, this attorney general, and believed, and it's hard for anybody like us to believe, that he was going to divorce Ethel Kennedy and marry her. And so in the book, I prove that that was what her mindset was as she went into August of 1962. This made me curious about whether she would have been suicidal at that particular point. But as you remember, what the official verdict was, she committed probable suicide. Would that have happened? Would what Bobby Kennedy have done put her in that state of mind? Dorothy had written about her that she was in good spirits. She was waiting on a Broadway play that she was going to do. She might marry Joe DiMaggio if it didn't work out with RFK and all of that. And so I looked first at the autopsy report, and it said that she died of an overdose of drugs. And then I looked at her certificate of death a few days later, and they changed it to probable suicide. And that made me really wonder about what happened. So I looked into the forensics involving her death, and they were all across the board. There were real question marks, and Dorothy Kilgallen wrote another column asking all these questions about, you know, how could she have ingested 40 to 50 pills from the time that she would have done that to her death? That was impossible. I confirmed that with a detective who wondered about it. Right. Why was the light on under her door? She always slept in the dark. Why was she nude? She never slept in the nude. Dorothy asked all these questions, and so I asked the same questions. And I then came back to the fact that I believe that Marilyn, you know, had been silenced. Well, who had the motive to do that? Well, apparently from a CIA document that I found that was issued the day before Marilyn died, Marilyn had made a huge mistake. At an event up near the California-Nevada border, she was there with the Kennedys, she was there with Frank Sinatra, she was there with a number of people. And she found out that Bobby was not going to marry her, and also that they might even videotape some of her, if she had sex with the Kennedys, that might be videotaped, and she just went mad. Hmm. She screamed, she tried to get DiMaggio to come get her, and then she made a statement that actually cost her life, and it's right in the CIA document. It says the subject, Marilyn, threatened to hold a press conference and tell all. You know, that would give us the feeling that she was going to expose the relationships with both Kennedys, which would have been bad enough. But this document says the subject also made references to bases in Cuba and knew of the president's plan to kill Castro. Mm. So apparently both JFK and RFK shared national secrets with her. And you can imagine that Bobby Kennedy could not let her issue a press conference. So I kept thinking, motive-wise, who has the motive to have eliminated Marilyn Monroe if, in fact, she was murdered? So I looked then at the situation that happened right around Marilyn's death. And basically, I was able to show that on the day that Marilyn died, Bobby Kennedy was in Los Angeles with Peter Lawford. They went to Marilyn's home and begged her not to hold a press conference or go to the media. She refused. And then it was just a logical conclusion that Bobby couldn't let this happen. And using operatives of his, they went ahead and orchestrated Marilyn's death.
The supposition then becomes, if he had been prosecuted, if this had been revealed at that point in 1963, that might have prevented his brother being assassinated, because one of the collateral damages of JFK being killed is that now his brother is basically toothless from that point forward, and it's going to take him almost 5 years to get back to a position where he really has enough clout to do something about it. This is not the first time I have read that one of the reasons that John Kennedy died was to neutralize Bobby Kennedy. Mm-hmm. But this is the first time that I've read the reason would be because of this previously existing relationship with Marilyn Monroe. That's pretty startling.
Well, it is, and it shocked me as well. You know, Dorothy Kilgallen was the most credible reporter to have covered the JFK assassination, and in The Reporter Who Knew Too Much, I prove that, you know, she interviewed Jack Ruby at his trial. You know, she spent 18 months looking into the investigation. Whatever Ruby told her, she went to New Orleans, where there was a mafia Don Carlos Marcello, and that connected because Joe Kennedy ordered JFK to appoint Bobby Kennedy attorney general. That was a double cross, because those same mafioso had helped JFK win the election. And Joe's promise was, you help us win the election, we'll leave you alone. Well, the first thing Bobby did was deport Marcello and accuse him of racketeering. And you can't mess around with those guys.
No.
And so Marcello and his cohort said, well, look, we could kill JFK, we could kill Bobby Kennedy, who I hate, but JFK will come after everything we have, come after us with everything the government has. So we killed JFK, and Bobby Kennedy is powerless. Well, if Bobby Kennedy would have been prosecuted, for the death of Marilyn Monroe, then he would have been powerless, as you say. And there wouldn't have been any JFK assassination. You stretch that to 65, and Dorothy Kilgallen would not have been killed because she wouldn't have had an investigation, an assassination to investigate. It all fits together, I believe.
Mark Shaw, thank you so much for being with us today on WTBF.
Thank you so much.
Our thanks again to Mark Shaw, the author of Collateral Damage, The Mysterious Deaths of Marilyn Monroe, JFK and Dorothy Kilgallen, and the ties that bind them to Robert Kennedy and the JFK assassination.
And finally, an encore presentation from November 24th, 2013, Dr. Jerome Corsi, author of Who Really Killed Kennedy? 50 Years Later, Stunning New Revelations About the JFK Assassination from WND Books. I was very impressed by all the research you did, and more than a little tickled that you referenced a lot of books that I reviewed through the years, because being a baby boomer, I remember, like most baby boomers, exactly where I was on the day that John F. Kennedy died.
Well, of course, and I mean, I go back to even the 50s. I first started watching the Kennedys with the McClellan Committee hearings. My dad was a labor lobbyist in D.C., and so 1957 was as far back as I go with the Kennedys. Thank you for, I've been researching this for 50 years. Forensic evidence, the ballistics evidence, and then realize what the argument is that the Warren Commission was a whitewash and that there was a conspiracy, and then begin to say, okay, if there's more than one shooter, who were they and who is responsible for the assassination? And that's where I think I try to do, to pull it together so people come away in this book, you get an idea of what happened and a pretty coherent idea of how it fits together.
I suppose the simplest way of approaching your theories put forth in this book that have the basis of lots and lots of facts and research is the idea that the majority of Americans believe, and as a result of their beliefs, there was a congressional committee that reopened the Kennedy assassination, as well as his brother Robert's assassination, and also addressed Martin Luther King's assassination, and that is that there was a conspiracy to assassinate the president. Might even say, with some degree of accuracy, a coup d'etat took place on November the 22nd, 1963.
That's where I start, too, and I basically say that it was the CIA, and I show that when Jack Kennedy fired Alan Dulles, who was head of the CIA, Dulles had lied to Kennedy over the Bay of Pigs, trying to get Kennedy to commit a naval air attack when the invasion failed. The invasion was not patriots trying to get back Cuba. It was a hired mercenary army by the CIA, and Kennedy was not going to go to war launching a naval airstrike against Cuba, which is what Dulles had tried to force him into doing. Kennedy instead accepted the blame for the incident, which Dulles never figured he would do. And Kennedy firing Dulles, I think, set himself against fighting these lying CIA wars. And one of the major premises of my book, Who Really Killed Kennedy, is that we're still dealing with the consequences of the Kennedy assassination because the dark forces won that day. Kennedy's desire to break up the CIA, not fight in Vietnam, break up the Federal Reserve, these were things that have never happened, and we're still fighting Saddam Hussein and no weapons of mass destruction. These issues are still around. I try to get people into understanding how a conspiracy was necessary by beginning with the forensic evidence in the case and showing how when Kennedy's body was brought into Parkland Hospital right immediately after the shooting in Dallas, and Parkland Hospital is a world-class hospital, the doctors recognized immediately that they weren't going to save Kennedy's life. His head was blown away, and these wounds were from the front. The throat wound was a little puncture wound about the circumference of a number 2 pencil, lead pencil, which means an entry wound from the front, and the back of Jack Kennedy's head was observed blown away, about the size of a grapefruit piece of the back of his skull gone, and again, that would indicate a front wound to the head with the back of the skull blown out. If there was a shooter from the front, then Lee Harvey Oswald shooting from behind, the limousine had already passed the school book depository when the shooting began. Lee Harvey Oswald could not have been the single shooter.
Even in the autopsy photos from Bethesda, and this is gruesome, but it's true, the top of his head looks like someone hit him with an axe.
Yes.
But his face is intact. Now, if he was shot from behind and it blew out his head,
that would not be the case. So that's, yeah, even though there's a lot of controversy over the autopsy that took place in Bethesda, and there was a considerable controversy at the time about why Parkland didn't get to do it, because in those days it wasn't illegal, it wasn't a federal offense to kill the president, amazingly enough.
And the autopsy should have been done at Parkland. There was a world-class doctor, specialist in autopsies at Parkland, that wanted to do the autopsy, and the body was taken out of Parkland Hospital gunpoint by the Secret Service. And when Jack Kennedy's body got to Washington, the autopsy done at Bethesda was done by a doctor who had really never done an autopsy before. The back wound in Jack Kennedy was only observed to be about a quarter of an inch into his body. There was never any connection made between the back wound and the neck wound passing through Kennedy's body. That was never medically established at the autopsy. And that's the primary basis on which the Warren Commission had its single bullet theory, that this one bullet passed through Kennedy from the back to the neck and then hit Connolly and injured him, breaking a rib and breaking a wrist in Connolly, and somehow turned out to be a pristine bullet with no damage, which is not credible.
No.
There's no medical evidence for that because the autopsy at Bethesda did not establish that the bullet passed through Jack Kennedy's body.
Connolly, who survived the attack, refused to allow anyone, even at his death, to autopsy his body and find how many metal fragments were left in his body, which would have come off the bullet that went through him and did a considerable amount of damage to him.
Right. In fact, even with looking at the pictures from the operations of Connolly, which show, you know, the x-rays which show lead in his body, it's pretty clear that there's more lead that was left in Connolly's body than was missing from this pristine bullet 399. And I show very carefully that the orderly who found this bullet in Parkland, a guy named Tomlinson, that the bullet was never on a gurney that Kennedy or Connolly had ever been placed on. So it was like a planted bullet.
Mm-hmm. Just sort of magically appeared.
Magically appeared.
And interestingly enough, there was one particular person who promoted this magic bullet theory, a lawyer, Arlen Specter, who would be a very familiar name on into the 1970s.
That's right. In fact, Arlen Specter was a senator from Pennsylvania. He's dead now, but he was a long-term senator from Pennsylvania. And the single bullet theory was concocted because the Warren Commission realized that there were only three shots that Lee Harvey Oswald or anyone using a Mannlich or Carcano rifle could have gotten off in the time that there was for the shooting, only maximum 8 seconds. When the commission found out that one bullet missed and hit a bystander, a guy named Taig, the commission was thrown into a complete confusion until Arlen Specter said, well, we'll just make it so that one bullet hit both Kennedy and Connolly, the second bullet missed, and the third bullet hit Kennedy in the head. Now, again, that was forcing the evidence into a predetermined conclusion, because the evidence wasn't driving that. It was the necessity to make it only three shots, not four, when Connolly always insisted he'd been hit by a separate shot than it hit John Kennedy. And Connolly knew weapons. He was experienced around weapons. He was a sportsman, and Connolly recognized it as gunfire immediately, and I think he would have known if the same shot hit him. He heard the first shots, and typically someone who's hit by a bullet doesn't hear the shot that hits them.
Right.
First interview he gave, which when he was still in the hospital, was important because Connolly had not even seen the Zapruder film, and this whole single bullet theory had not yet been concocted by Arlen Specter. So right away, Connolly, within hours of being shot and saying he was hit by a separate bullet. And then there's interviews of Connolly all through his life in which he maintained that same story. He insisted he was not hit by the bullet that hit Jack Kennedy. And Connolly, I think, knew that was the truth and he was going to stick by it, even though the Warren Commission had to argue Connolly didn't know what he was talking about. That's what they dismissed. Warren Commission dismissed any evidence that didn't fit their predetermined theory. And as I show some of the internal memos from the FBI, this Nicholas D.B. Katzenbeck memo to Johnson, which made it really clear that the whole goal of this Warren Commission was to pin the blame on Lee Harvey Oswald.
So there you have it, a new book, a book from a year ago, and a book from 9 years ago, all to discuss who really killed the president. Thanks so much for joining us on The Bookshelf. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and favorite podcast. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.